Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute, the premier online resource for discovering smarter ways to create and sell your own profitable digital products and services. Our value-rich charter membership offer ends November 6th, 2015. Find out more at digitalcommerce.com. That's digitalcommerce.com.
Hello, this is Amy Harrison, and you're listening to Hit Publish, where I cover simple ways to get better results with your online business. This week, we're talking about how long your content should be, and how much information do you need to give your reader to encourage them to sign up, buy, get in touch, or take action? How much content is too much, and is there such a thing? Should you use jargon or assume that your reader knows what you're talking about? If you've ever written content and wondered, how long should this be, and what should I include? This episode is for you. I want to thank you for downloading this podcast, and I want to thank Rainmaker FM for hosting it. So are you ready to get clear on how to get the content length that Goldilocks would say is not too long, not too short, but just right? Then let's hit publish. Okay, this week's Dear Amy letter comes from Claudia, who is a former journalist now working in content marketing. And she had to say this in the comments of a show a few weeks back. Hi, Amy. I'm really enjoying listening to you as I walk to work in the morning. I love your humour, and I often smile to myself while walking. People must think I'm mad. Smiley face. I have a question for you. As a former journalist who is now working in content marketing, I battle with turning off the journalist inside me, who always wants to explain everything I'm writing about. Colleagues feel I overdo it. What I mean is, they assume that people reading the company blog knows the industry and the jargon, etc., and they do not need to be spoon-fed about what stuff means. Where does one draw the line? Now, this is an interesting conundrum. And Claudia, I don't think people think you're mad walking to work. I think they think, look at her smiling to herself in the morning. I'll have what she's having. Now, Claudia's question is an interesting conundrum. As a journalist, every story that you write needs to stand on its own, which means you need to give enough information to someone who's reading it for the first time to understand what's going on. However, while journalists often write stories that reach the wider public, when you're creating content to market your business, you usually have a specific niche or niche that you're aiming at. Not only that, but if you are building up an audience with a company blog, for example, and they're returning again and again to read your materials, they are going to build familiarity with you and your business. So they're going to understand those industry terms and jargon. So if you are taking time to explain those terms each time, that will frustrate your audience, who are going to think, I know this already. So if you're stopping to explain things all the time, it's going to interrupt the flow and momentum of your content. But what do you do about people that may not be as familiar with these kind of industry words and terms? And so you have a bit of a battle with, you know, is this long enough? Am I explaining this enough? Is there enough information or is there too much? And this problem doesn't just affect journalists turned content marketers. When I've been coaching clients in the past, there are a lot of questions around content length and also what information to include. For example, is this sales page long enough? Is it too short? Have I missed out any sections? I feel like I've already said this on another page and I don't want to repeat myself. Do I need to explain this particular term? And so on and so on. So here's what we're going to look at today in this episode of Hit Publish. One, first of all, we're going to look at what to do with jargon and industry terms. And then next, we're going to look at how you can evaluate how long your content should be and what kind of information you're going to want to include. First up, jargon. Now, what do I mean by jargon? Technically, this word is defined as special words or expressions used by a profession or group that are difficult for others to understand. So for your purpose, it's going to be your industry terms. In copywriting, these terms would be things like call to action, subheadings, below the fold, risk reversal, etc. If you were an analytics firm, you might have terms like ad hoc reporting, acid test, algorithm, cloud, clickstream. And if you were a country music fanatic, it would be things like lost job, wife has left, dog died, beer 30, pop a top again, straight tequila over mixed emotions. I jest. Jargon is only a problem if it excludes the audience that you want to reach or makes it difficult for your ideal customers to engage with you. Oh, let's pop in here for a coffee. Hi, welcome to the coffee shop. What's your name? What? My name's Amy. Jamie. Great to see you, Jamie. Now, what can I get you? I'd like a coffee, please. What kind of coffee? What do you have? Well, we've got an affogato, a Baltimore, a black eye, an Americano, an Olay, a bonbon, Medici, chai latte, chocolate Dalmatian. I was just looking for something like a coffee. Well, I mean, come on, don't waste my time here. Do you want a skinny, shimmy, frocker, chocker, mocker, timisima, venti, slimmy, binny, bee, bopper, lula, litamina? Is that a thing? I should know. I am a barista-re-marina. It's like a barista, but better. Now, look, what about your beans? Do you want them fair trade, ethically sourced, hand ground, foot ground, or we can just put them through our flux capacitor? Flux capacitor? You're making all of this up now. I just want a coffee. Well, Jamie, it's Amy. Perhaps you're just not meant for this kind of establishment. We have a certain clientele that like their coffee served with a slice of overblown pompousness. So, what do you do if you have jargon terms that crop up in your industry and you want to use them in your content marketing? Well, the first thing to remember is that jargon isn't necessarily a bad thing. In fact, it actually helps bind people together and shows that you are an expert. If you're not using industry terms, a prospect may feel that you don't speak their language, and as a result, may feel that you're not qualified or experienced enough to help them with their problem. And that's a key skill in copywriting, to sound like you are on the same level as your prospect or customer. So don't be afraid to use industry terms. The question to ask is, does my audience understand and use these terms naturally when talking about the product, service, or industry you work in? If so, go ahead and use them. But what if you're writing to a mixed audience? Let's say you have a computer blog and you've got a bunch of computer experts that like to stay up to date with the latest trends, but you may also have beginners who are just getting into computing and you don't want to turn them off. Well, the easiest thing to do here is what I call the Wikipedia effect. In fact, looking back, I'm so glad we never had Wikipedia at school when I was at school, because if I had been using it to do any kind of research, it would have gone something like this. Okay, I've got that textiles project on silk shawls and scarves. Should be pretty straightforward. Let's see what I can find. What's this news piece? Famous silk shawl linked to Aaron Kaminsky. I wonder who he is. I bet Wikipedia would know. Ooh, Aaron Kaminsky. The Whitechapel murders. That sounds grim. Oh, Jack the Ripper. He was a possible suspect of Jack the Ripper. Famous serial killer. Oh, here's a link for more infamous serial killers. 2 weeks later. Brilliant. Finally finished my report. Wikipedia is brilliant. Hello. Miss Amy Harrison, you're from Scotland Yard. We'd like to ask you some questions down at the station. Really? Why? We've been monitoring certain online activity in the area and we're a bit disturbed about your internet search history. In the past couple of weeks, you've searched for a number of infamous criminals, methods of poisoning, how to evade police detection, how to get stains out of a carpet, how to get rid of criminal evidence, as well as a recipe for a fruit trifle. Yeah, that was delicious. No, look, I can explain. It was all for a school project. Oh, really? Well, what was the subject of the project? Silk shawls? You're coming with me. In actual fact, I do sometimes worry that Wikipedia is one day going to get me into a lot of trouble in case anyone ever does go through the internet search history. And I know I'm not the only one, but it is just a curious mind as opposed to any kind of malicious intent. So have you ever gone to look up something on Wikipedia only to become distracted by those links that make you think, oh, I wonder what that is. I want to find out more about this term or this word or this person. Well, while you don't want to distract your customer for the sake of it, this effect is very powerful because it retains your reader's attention and builds engagement. So what does this have to do with handling jargon on your site? Well, one thing that you can do is either build a glossary of terms on your website. And that way, whenever you use a term that you think maybe beginners or a subsection of your audience may not be familiar with, simply link to the glossary from that word. And people will know, if I'm unfamiliar with this, I can click through and find out more information. Or the other thing that you can do, if you've got terms that crop up again and again, you could write a whole separate article and link to that from the word. So for example, let's say I've got a blog post and I'm talking about writing headlines, and I mentioned that they're often used in squeeze pages. Now, someone might not know what a squeeze page is. Now, I could have a separate article called How Squeeze Pages Can Increase Your Sales, or Everything You Need to Know About Squeeze Pages, and then I would link from the word squeeze page to that article. Now, this accomplishes two things. For the reader who already knows what a squeeze page is, doesn't interrupt their flow of reading. But for the beginner, they don't get stuck or feel out of the loop or excluded, because there's somewhere that they can go to learn more about it and then come back and continue with the original article. But ultimately, this all comes down to understanding your audience and the level of awareness of these terms. So that's jargon. Next, we need to talk about the length of content. How long should your content be? And for the purpose of this episode, I want to look at content where you want someone to take a specific action at the end. A sales page, a registration page, a sign-up page. We're not going to focus on the length of blog posts, because that's a whole other episode in itself. So how long should your sign-up page be, or your sales page for that new ebook? It boils down to a combination of two variables. One, how familiar your audience is, and two, the level of investment you're asking from them. And it breaks down in very simple terms like this. When we're talking about familiarity, I want you to think about answering the following questions. One, how familiar is the audience with you? Two, how familiar is the audience with the problem and the need to solve the problem? And three, how familiar are they with the solution that you're offering? The answers to these questions will affect the length of your content. If your customer is very familiar with you, the product and the problem, and you're asking for a low investment, you don't need a huge amount of content. However, if they're not familiar and you're asking for a lot of investment, you're going to need a lot of content to let your customer make the decision to take action. And of course, there's a spectrum in between where they may not be familiar with you, but you're asking for a low investment, such as signing up to your free newsletter. What I want you to do is, when you're planning your sales page or sign-up page, ask those three questions, because each one will give you an idea of what you need to include, and that in turn will give you an idea of your length. Remember, we're not talking about an arbitrary length of, you know, it has to be 500 words or 750 words. We're talking about the amount of useful information there that gives your customer the confidence to take the action. So let's walk through these. Question one, how familiar is my audience with me and my brand? Now, funnily enough, this is something I see a lot of business owners forget to include on their key sales pages or registration pages. They feel like, I've already mentioned this on my about page, I don't need to tell people again. Well, if you have a key skill or a key piece of credibility, then you do want to repeat it, because this builds confidence. There's a well-known speaking coach. I was looking at his site recently for a client of mine, and I think you never, ever see his name without New York Times bestselling author next to it, ever. In fact, I think he's changed his name to that. So you'd be surprised at how little prospects sometimes know about you, and this is a key branding exercise. You know, when people say your name, what do you want them to think? Oh, she's the coach for work-at-home mums. Or, that's the software that makes small business accounting easy. Perhaps you have a key experience or award or qualification. Maybe you've worked with a key, you know, a particularly big brand. If your audience isn't familiar with you, make sure that these key bits pop out. For example, get the newsletter that Forbes magazine recommends as a must-read for all startups. Or, in this course, you'll learn self-defense from the person who's trained military operatives and special security forces. So jot down some of those ideas. What do you definitely want people to know about you and your brand? And if you want some inspiration for things to mention, check out the Hit Publish episode about trust medals and building credibility. I'll link to that in the show notes. Okay, question two. How familiar are they with the problem you're offering to solve? If your customer isn't even sure they have a problem, it's going to be hard to recommend a solution to that problem without explaining that there is a problem there that needs to be solved. So ask yourself, the people who are visiting this page, are they familiar with the problem and the need to solve it? If they're not, you may need to give them some help to diagnose this problem and to show that they need help. Let's say you provide a checklist for running a successful business blog. But your customer, you know, whilst they're interested in blogging, maybe they don't feel like their blog really needs an immediate fix. So you could perhaps include content that illustrates there is a problem that needs solving. For example, you know, are you getting more client inquiries each month you blog about your business? Is your business getting free PR by your blog being featured in the media? Do you have a growing newsletter list that generates sales every time you run a promotion? If not, your blog could be doing much more to bring revenue into your business. Now, hopefully this is giving you an overview of the process of analyzing what people need to know before you sit down and write that page. So the third and final question is, how familiar are people with the solution that you offer? Now, you may have a very engaged newsletter list. Perhaps, let's say you are a dietitian and you often run meal plans. You let people know when a new one is out. Now, if they're expecting it, they're familiar with it, you probably don't need that much detail about why it's important to have a meal plan, or if they need a meal plan, they're keen, they know you, and they're already anticipating what you have. If so, a couple of bullet points about how it's going to save them time and money, it's delicious, and it's easy to use, that then may be enough. But it might be that you're offering a completely new service. Perhaps even a service that your reader doesn't know existed. In this case, you are going to want to provide information about what you have and how it works. And I'll be honest with you, this can feel like pulling teeth as a writer because you are so familiar with your product that these details seem obvious. But if it is a new service, you must write for those people who have zero knowledge about the offer. And it might not be obvious that people don't know what you're offering. For example, let's say you are a health and well-being coach and you have a number of online guides and ebooks that are very popular. You decide you want to expand your offering and think you'll do some one-to-one coaching. So you mention that you're going to offer coaching and you think that some brief information is enough because people are familiar with already with you and your guides. Well, that might be so, but this still is a new service to you and they may not be familiar with you in the capacity of being a coach. As a result, they may have questions such as, well, how is it done? Is it via Skype or phone, or is it distance coaching? Will I even get to talk to you live? What materials will I receive? What will be expected of me? How do I know whether coaching is a better fit for me than just using one of the ebooks or the guides? Now, these questions may not seem obvious to you because, as I say, these are pretty straightforward if you already know the answers. And quite often, our customers don't. Or the other alternative is that you may even be offering a completely new type of service. Perhaps you've developed a groundbreaking app that hasn't existed until now. And in that case, you are going to have to explain what it is, what it does, how it works to build people's confidence around investing in it. So that covers familiarity. And finally, you need to look at the investment you're asking from someone. Very simply, the more investment, the more content you need. A $1,000 course is going to need the equivalent of an online brochure, while a free 20-page ebook may just need a short page with some bullet benefits. Now, this episode should give you some pretty good tools where you can basically assess the length of your sales page, your landing page, or your squeeze page before you sit down to write it. I'll also link to an article that I wrote a few years ago which covers this and looks at how the combination of familiarity and investment determines whether you need short, medium, or long copy. So here's my question to you. Think of a sales page or a registration page or a sign-up page that you have. Go through those three questions about how familiar your audience is and then ask yourself, have you given them enough details to take the action you want them to take? I would love to hear about how you tackle the challenge of making sure people have just enough information to act. You know what to do? Let me know in the show comments. I want to thank you for being a groovy Hit Publish listener. If you found this useful today, I'd love it if you popped over to iTunes and left a rating and review. It takes just a few minutes, but apparently if you do, you're 42% more likely to have a vending machine give you two chocolate bars by accident instead of one. Really worth doing. Don't forget, if you'd like to be featured in the Dear Amy column, simply leave a comment on the show page with your question or problem, or email me using hello@writewithinfluence.com. That's all for this week, so until next time, remember to take action and hit publish.